You're listening to the USCA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USCA eventing news. Welcome to the USCA official podcast, episode 283. We are back, listeners. We are recovered post-Kentucky. I really hope that you enjoyed the team talk debrief with Jenny Autry and Eric Dubander. If you haven't listened to get their immediate reactions on Kentucky, then go back and give it a listen. And we are now turning our attentions to the next show. And I'm delighted to welcome my very good friend. He is an Irish silver medalist from the World Equestrian Games in Tryon a couple of years ago. Welcome back to the show, Sam Watson.
Thank you very much, Nicole Brown. Delighted to be here.
I'm looking forward to picking your brains on this topic. So what we are going to be talking about, listeners, is basically the road to a successful cross-country round. And we are going to cover everything from your basic training at home before your event, what to do when you get to the event, walking the course, top tips from Sam, and then finally, how to tackle the course itself. So Sam, obviously I appreciate that there is a lot we could be talking about. So we're going to kind of hopefully give people a few top tips in each of those areas that they will be able to take forward to their next event. Now, being the good Irish rider that you are, you're always superb cross country. Just give us a bit of an insight from your perspective, what cross country riding is and what a successful cross-country round should look like. Obviously, you want it to be clear, but what should be the picture, in your opinion?
It's a good question. I mean, that look, I love talking about this phase because it's probably what gets us all into this sport. It's so much fun. It should really feel fun. I want to always help riders that they're not too terrified. You know, a little bit of adrenaline and things like that can be an asset. You know, that's there for a lot of people in sports. But it should look like you have time. It should actually look quite relaxed. You know, I think a lot of people think about cross country as being this very high adrenaline, high risk, kind of high octane phase where we sometimes have to get scrappy and we sometimes have to save a turn. I think that always looks spectacular and it always gets a kind of a whoop and a cheer and a bit of appreciation from people as well when we save a situation. But you just don't want every fence looking like that. I mean, there's far too much, you're gonna have far too much chance involved, and eventually the horse's confidence and probably your own confidence is gonna take a battering. So it's actually okay to feel like you have time. That will be one of the big things I was going to finish up with, was mindset. It's okay to feel like you have time on a cross country course, and that you're thinking you're sharp and you're alert, but smooth is good.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And I think, well, that, I mean, that opens the big thing with cross country. Because the first thing you've really got to do is try and evaluate where you are, because that's going to, you know, what are you aiming for? Are you going to do a prelim or a beginner novice or an intermediate? You know, what am I aiming for? What am I ready for? And you've got to be careful assessing where you are in cross country, as you kind of alluded to there, Nicole, based on, you know, just whether you went clear or not. You do have to look at, well, how did I perform, rather than, you know, what score did I get? And then really got to try and start understanding. It's really important to try and understand really all three phases and how they work. But if you're going to train effectively, it's, you know, why did I feel like I was getting towed along a little bit by my horse, not fully in control, you know, getting probably going faster than I wanted to go. Horse felt a little bit strong in my hand. You got to try and understand why it was, you know, I wasn't able to soften the rein because I felt like they'd just go even faster, but you have to be able to soften the rein and things like that. So you've got to be careful cross country because most people jump clear. And so a clear is a very possible outcome to get, even when things aren't maybe exactly where we need them to be for the next level. So that evaluation is really important.
Okay, so in that case then, let's start at home. So it is before your competition, it could be the start of your season, it could be in between competitions, wherever you are, listeners, at this point of time. Let's talk about the things you can do at home. And I guess the first thing is, let's say, you know, schooling exercises. We'll start with, instead of going out onto a big cross-country training field, what can you do that are in the school? They've become increasingly popular, sort of arena eventing sort of type of shows, certainly in the UK. And we have a lot of very, very good facilities that are available. So what can you do and what should you be doing at home to kind of work on the technical aspects of it
before
you head out into the big fields?
That's a good question. So I think the second most important attribute in your cross-country skill set is control. We'll talk a lot about balance, pace, and line or direction. But if you can't influence the horse's balance, the horse's pace, and the horse's direction or line that you're on, well, there's no point trying to manage it. You need to be able to influence that and basically control it. It's really important when we think of control that is about your preparation towards the fence. And also very important when you're training to think about how you land after the fence, or when you've landed, getting that horse, you know, not just landing and not having any sort of influence on what the horse is doing, whether their shoulder goes left or right, or whether they go fast or slow when they land. So to think of that control afterwards. The actual jumping itself will always be the horse's responsibility. And that's really important. You know, our job is to not get in the way at that point. So when it comes to control, you can do so many exercises at home. I often, like a thing I'm using now a little bit with people is we always wanted to go to those cross-country facilities and jump 100 different fences. And there's an awful lot to be gained. And, you know, young horses, of course, need that education. And yes, that's the fun aspect as well, to jump lots of different fences. But actually, a lot of improvement can come from jumping the same fence 100 times, and to just change that philosophy. Both of those are a little bit extreme, so don't worry, you don't have to jump the same fence 100 times, but think of that mindset. Think of trying to do it a little bit better. I love the use of transitions. It's really good. Trotting into fences is really good for cross country because it's going to improve the number one attribute, which I'll come on to a second, which is footwork. So trotting into fences is really good, but also, you know, jumping a fence out of canter and coming back to trot afterwards, doing a transition, then back up into canter, maybe doing that on a circle. So you're also training your control of the horse's shoulder, and basically doing an Ingrid Klimke flat work exercise, which is a 20 meter circle with a transition from canter to trot and back up to canter again. But having a little cross country fence, maybe it's a normal cross country fence, maybe it's even a skinny. And it's a beautiful way to bring things back to simplicity, to bring things back to the control, to get really comfortable with what you're doing, not just for you, but for the horse. And it's exercises like that, and it's thinking like that, that's going to bring you back to that smoothness that we were talking about, and that situation where you feel like you have time, you know, you have time to do your fences. So there's lots of things that you don't be afraid to simplify. Don't be afraid to put just one or two fences in your school and just think about the basics, your general control, your pace and your line.
That's really actually good, I'm sure, for all of those listeners out there thinking, I don't have easy access to a big cross-country schooling field and therefore I can't go, you know, as frequently as I would like to, that there are lots of things that they can do at home with fewer facilities. And I think that's really important. Okay, so control is a big one. What about the footwork? Is that something that you're starting at home as well? Or is that something that you will take forward when you start going out and about a bit further afield?
Well, you know, the most effective footwork is going to be out on that natural terrain, you know, using the slopes, mounds, banks, that, you know, those kind of things, those awkward situations that you just don't get to practice enough in the school. So it is so important to try and get that time. And if someone said to me, Sam, I have two choices, I can go to this amazing schooling facility that, you know, maybe it's all weather and it's got these 100 different fences. And there's so many fences to jump there and it's really cool. There's a water, you know, there's probably a bank that you can jump on and off and there's lots of ditches and stuff. Or I can go to this other place that doesn't have that many fences, but it's got all these kind of mounds and slopes and hills, you know, it's really natural. I would say the second option, go there, because if you're able to do a lot of the exercise that we've talked about in the school with those, you know, jumping on your turns, jump, you can do all your angles. Another one is your skinnies. You know, you can start to train when you're training for skinnies and that accuracy, start wide and then just gradually through repetition, just start to make that fence a little bit narrower. If you, you know, use different length poles and things like that to be able to do that. So your horse learns how to focus on just a narrower target. And there's a lot of training that is about pushing the comfort zone. You know, it's okay to make mistakes. You just learn from them. For me, with skinnies, it's about precision. And actually, you try not to make mistakes. That would be my view. I don't like runouts, you know, I because it can become a habit. I'd much prefer to really train almost for that dangerous word perfection. It doesn't exist, but think of precision when it comes to skinnies. Now, your footwork can still start in the school. Okay, so you can do... bounces are brilliant. You particularly for people going up the levels, you don't want to get to an intermediate or maybe an advanced and you're faced with a bounce and you're like, oh my God, it's been ages since I jumped a bounce. You know, bounces should really be normal. That's about that quick agility and the quick footwork. I love to do a line, building up to a line of six bounces, you know, bounce, 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 bounce. It's a great feeling. It's hard work for the horses. You don't need to go particularly high. It's a great workout for them and you can just build it up slowly. You can start with one and then add two and add, you know, you can build it up nicely. So that's really good. And then also don't be afraid to play with your distances. You know, don't stick to the rule book and the playbook when it comes to building your related distances at home. Go and build a 3.5 stride distance. Not very big again, and just come in nice and soft in a good balance and just let your horse work it out. Don't be, you know, if they take off a little early and you get a little bit left behind, you know, you're training yourself to stay with the horse and you're letting your horse figure it out. If they want to pop in a little extra stride, that's good as well. Give them a pat, make it fun, but just try and, you know, keep their shoulders on the line that you want them to keep it on. And that's a really good, with footwork, you know, you can have those little mini mistakes where they're going, oh, I was a little bit off that one. Oh, I was a little bit close to that one. It's great practice so that the horse's ability to cope with those situations is improving.
Okay. I like that a lot. And actually they're the things that will come in so, so handy when you really do have that moment out on the course and you need a helping hand or something hasn't quite gone to plan. I guess the other thing is you were talking there about little mounds and, you know, banks and bits like that. Do it on your normal hacking route. You know, if you're out hacking your horse or you're going out somewhere with a friend that's a little bit different, look for the little stick that could be jumped, or look for the ditch that could be jumped. I mean, surely that's a great way. I'm sure Lauren Nicholson was on this show actually last year sometime, and she called it, I want to say it was bushwhacking or something, but she'd take young horses out and they're just basically... they'd go through the trees, they'd go up the banks, they'd come down the banks, you'd find a little ditch just to get them really confident and kind of thinking for themselves.
Yeah, we do a lot. I mean, over here in Ireland, that I think that's why people like to buy Irish horses is we start a lot of our horses before we sit on their back, you know, and the 3-year-olds, 2-year-olds even, we'll take them out in the end of a lunge line and we'll go and play across all these big, huge ditches and on and off all these banks, over these hedges and stuff, and we just get them used to playing around and working it all out and building up that kind of foot eye coordination that they need. And I always say that footwork is what gets us out of trouble. It's our get out of jail free. You know, the control and the precision is what helps us to avoid getting into trouble, and it's really important to train both. I think that some people get too obsessed with control and, you know, they're actually trying to almost dominate the horse, and it's really, you've got to remember, you cannot jump that fence. You know, the horse has got to jump that fence. All you're trying to do is make it as easy as possible for the horse, that you get them to the right fence, the right point of the fence if you can, and in the right balance at the right pace, right direction, all those kind of things. You're just trying to help that, but really you need to know, not just from a performance point of view in terms of keeping a clean score, but also from a safety point of view, you need to know that actually this horse will know how to work out whatever situation I get into, because we all get into situations where we need a bit of skill to get out of them, a bit of footwork.
Okay, perfect. So we have got bits that we can do in the arena at home, bits we can do at Hacking. What about if people are actually going for a big cross country school?
Yeah.
Ideally, I imagine with their trainer or with somebody that's able to help them on the ground, that kind of thing. But what would you say would be key if you're going to an event? What do you want your last cross country school to look and feel like?
Yeah, you've got to balance the the testing yourself side of it with the comfort zone and the confidence side of it. You know, you're really trying to manage both. I think that's the sort of the black and white thing with everything in life, from work to everything like that. You need your stressful moments where you go, whoa, I can't believe I did all that. I can't believe I really raised the game today. And I really the things I think that I didn't think I could do. Best to raise the bar and push yourself out of the comfort zone when you have that expert help close at hand. It's always much better to have someone else pushing you and someone who knows what you're ready for and how to take you to the next level. Don't be afraid to if there isn't someone that you can train with to take yourself to the next level, then don't be afraid to go for the more sort of confidence building block approach, which is go out there and just do not be afraid to start small and start simple. You know, I think we're just not good enough at that in the horse world. And if I've learned anything from sort of professional sport and I've become more professional in my approach to training, I've definitely learned that success is about simplicity done really, really well. It's not about really complex, really crazy, really wild, mad stuff. It's about doing things really, really well. So go and start on the small fences. And I will do this with whatever horse I'm on, from a 4-year-old to a 4-star, 5-star horse. Go and start over some of the small things and just let the horse get confident and, not over manage the situation. Let them, help them to sort of find their balance and work things out and just build up. A lot of the cross country schooling facilities are laid out like that, where you have maybe 2 or 3 fences beside each other that are getting progressively bigger or progressively harder if they're sort of ditch or bank type things or water type fences. And just take your way through that process, as I say, building blocks, and finish off easy as well. You don't have to sort of start easy, get harder and finish on the hardest thing that you've done that was maybe quite a big effort. I wouldn't always finish up on that. I'd go and finish up on some nice, easier ones as well, so that the confidence is really top notch. I always refer to there's a confidence fuel tank in the horse, and you've got to be aware of it when you're going cross country as well. But you've just got to be careful. Where is that gauge? Because I don't want that gauge getting towards empty. And every time that your horse has to get you out of jail. And maybe you take some fuel away from that confidence because they're a little bit like, whoa, what happened there? So you just got to then go and build that confidence back up again, go and do something nice and simple, nice and easy.
Sam, you are nailing these one-liners. I love the success is simplicity done really, really well. The confidence fuel tank. That is brilliant. Okay, a lot to take from that. Right.
That's why we started a podcast together, Nicole. That's what it's all about.
I know. I don't often tell him, listeners, how brilliant I think he is, but hopefully you are enjoying this as much as I am. Okay, so we are confident. We have got good control. Our horse's footwork is good. The fuel tank is full. So we're heading off to our event. So let's start with getting to an event, walking the course, because... And I know I've been guilty of this in the past. It's very easy to head out, walk the course, and just kind of walk straight to the start box, wander around,
Well, you're trying to walk your dog, aren't you? And then you've someone that you haven't seen for ages. So you need to catch up. Oh, it's great.
So you have to stop.
How are you? How's the boyfriend? What's happened with the, you know, how's the relationship? Yeah. Did you sell that horse? Did you buy a new one? Oh, tell me about it. Oh, go. We're at fence 7. What happened to the first 6?
Exactly. Walking the course, what should people do and what shouldn't they do? What are the key things for you?
Okay, so number one tip for course walking is when you walk up to a fence, what should be going through your head is what's the course designer thinking? I think that will help you to work out the fence. Obviously, there will be a lot of straightforward fences out there that you don't need to overthink. And the course designer has just thought, I'm just going to give them a nice, easy introduction to the course, or this is a bit of a let up fence. When that is the case, you should be trying to use it exactly for that, you know, to help warm your horse up, to you know, think of the confidence fuel tank, and the gauge there. Use those fences, ride them nicely and do all that sort of thing. But when you get to those trickier fences, you need to be thinking, right, is he using a slope, he or she using a slope or a turn or the fact that there's a little bit of a ditch here, what's that going to do to the horse's stride? Are they going to land a little bit flat footed and take a short stride rather than taking a long stride? Those, if you think about why the course designers designed the fence the way they have, you will probably solve the problem. And that is exactly what cross country is that the course designer is giving you a little problem. It's no different to a crossword or a Sudoku, whatever you're into. But for us eventers, it's the cross country. And then they're usually, particularly as you go up the levels, they're inviting you to let the horse sort of fall out through a shoulder on a turn or get run, you know, downhill a little bit and the balance to get a little bit too much on the forehand and not be able to sit on their hocks and do things like that. So then that gets you thinking about what you need to do to sort of counteract those measures. So for me, that's the first thing to try and work out the fence. That's what you should be trying to do as you walk up to it. Another good tip is the first time, which basically at a one day event, you're really only walking the course once. But that first time you walk up to a fence is really important because that's the only time you're going to see the fence the same way the horse does. So particularly when we go to internationals, we'll walk a course 4 or 5 times. We'll start getting onto my second or my next kind of area, which is around visualization and things like that. So you'll be coming up to this court, this fence, really quite familiar with it, and the horse will never have seen it. So just be aware if there are things that are going to make it hard to read, if there are things that could potentially distract the horse, things that could, you know, the jumping in and out of a forest or a wood or things like that. Your only thing that you can do in situations where you think, oh, I wonder if the horse is going to read this well, or I wonder if they're going to lock on to the right thing, is just to try and give yourself that little fraction of time and to give the horse a little fraction of time. My dad used to call it giving the horse time to put his glasses on, that you just, that split second where you just go, oh, yeah, they have a moment here to look. It basically means just don't rush in hooly like it's a steeplechase fence, just a little bit of balance coming in there and give them time. So those are there's the problem solving side of it, putting yourself in the mind of the course designer. And then there's that first glance, you know, Sam's stuck for words for the first time in his life, but kind of first impressions of the fence, first impressions.
I think that's important, isn't it? Because it's easy when you've walked a course and you're familiar with the course that you forget that most likely that's the first time that your horse has seen the fence of the question, and you know what's coming. They don't. They are literally taking their lead from you. Okay, what about if you are walking a course and you don't understand something and maybe you can't quite see what the course designer is looking for? And this could be at any level, all the way through from sort of an amateur grassroots competition all the way up to top level international classes. What can you do? Because there are options of sort of people to talk to, advice to get. What would you say? Do you know what? Go and ask the question. If you're not sure, who can you ask and how do you do it?
Exactly. Like there, don't be afraid to go up to anyone that you know, you'll know someone who knows vaguely what they're doing because you've seen their name 100 times on a result sheet. Everyone is really approachable in this game. It's a great sport for that. So do, you know, hope I would encourage you to be confident enough to even reach out to someone that you don't know, because maybe there isn't someone that you do know, that maybe there's no coach that you've worked with or no rider that you know well. So just, I encourage you to reach out to anyone and just say, well, what are you thinking there at that fence? That's an option. A second option, and I've actually done this a couple of times. I mean, you can use WhatsApp, but I actually find the OnForm Great app is great for this. It is to take a video of it and you can send it to someone who you know. And it might be hard for them to get the full context of, you know, where this fence comes in the course and things like that. So if there's someone on site, someone who's walked the course and knows the course, that's probably the first preference. But the other preference is really useful. Just take a quick video of it and WhatsApp it to your coach or send it via OnForm. And then they can either, you know, call you back up and talk you through it or do a little voiceover if you're using OnForm, even drawing on the kind of, this is the bit you need to aim for and stuff like that. So I've found that really, really useful. And I think that's a good one as well. So yeah, don't ever be stuck. You don't need to be, and you could even go to the secretary's office or whoever and say, is the course designer here? Could I ask them? Because I'll be honest, every course designer I know would love to talk about why they've designed a fence the way they have. And they would be only too delighted to give their feedback on that fence and what they're testing.
I love that, because it's an intimidating thought, isn't it? That I'm going to, you know, track the course designer down and say, and by all means, listeners, do it nicely. Don't be, you know, rude or horrible in any way. But, you know, you can go and say, oh, would you mind just explaining this to me? And you will understand what they're trying to ask of you and hopefully get that input. One thing that I will just add in here is when you're walking the course, one, look at a course map. Two, count the numbers. Because I was at an event just a couple of weeks ago and a top level Olympic rider, I will mention no names, in the UK, was on an 18 dressage or something ridiculous, had jumped clear, was at second to last fence cross country, just went sailing past it and was eliminated. And the funniest one wasn't funny, but the ironic thing was that 2-3 horses later, one of their students went out and they obviously walked the course together, because they also went sailing past. So it was a hard lesson to learn, it was. But even the top level riders do it. So don't be afraid to just count them up in your head. And, you know, if you have been talking to your mate about the horse that she sold or anything like that, just take a second to stop and go back and make sure that you're on the right track.
Exactly. And no, I mean, another one on that is do know your options and your alternatives. You know, there'll be fences that you walk up to, and just because plan A is route one and not to take the black flag, you still need to know. And it is, again, it may possibly more that you get this at international level. But, you know, in terms of whether you can go behind a certain fence or not, you know, if you intend to jump it, you can get 20 penalties if you go behind the line of the fence that you intend to jump and things like that. So you do need to know your little technicalities and things on that if you plan on doing something that's a bit plan B. And as I say, no plan Bs and Cs, because I was at the World Games. You know, a lot of people had planned, I think it was the first water, there was a bit of a waterfall, and a lot of people had planned to jump straight up where the waterfall was, and there were lots of options there, but actually some of the riders, when that waterfall was not riding well, a few horses, you know, weren't reading it very well early on, so suddenly everyone was being told and ordered to take plan B or plan C. And some riders are like, oh God, I actually haven't walked that one, you know, too well. Or I might've walked it the first time half thinking about it and not really know it that well. But that there's one other thing that is very important is, you know all those lines and know where everything is. And of course, walk distances to have an idea of what it is likely to be, but don't fixate on the number of strides, because I did this for 10 years and it's really hard not to do this. And it's really hard to not say, are you doing 3 or 4 strides at that fence? Are you doing 4 or 5 strides at that fence? the reality is that there is, it is, there's always the option for both, and you might even plan for one and get the other. And you've got to be comfortable having a plan, knowing, you know, what you're aiming for, which is, you know, I think I will try and get down there on the five strides and come in with the bigger canter or the more collected canter, whatever it is. But I'm also absolutely fine with knowing that I might get in there and actually just decide, oh no, the horse has picked it up, I've picked it up, I'm going to rock on down there because, you know, that's there. Or, you know, it's usually the other way. You plan to come in, you know, rocking on in there on the first distance, and then you decide, actually, I'm just going to sit up a little bit and just let the horse pop in an extra one here. That you just don't be too fixated and too dominated on one distance. I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, is they have mistakes because they were so fixated on trying to stick to the plan that they didn't leave themselves, they weren't comfortable having a plan B. And it shouldn't even look like a plan B. You know, you should just sit up there and let things happen naturally.
I guess that's when it comes back to sort of instinctive cross-country riding, which is ultimately what everybody's aiming for, of being able to tackle things as they come up. Okay, so we've got our training done, our courses walked, we've done our dressage, we've done our show jumping, or we've just done our dressage. It's a long format, you never know, it might be. So we're heading down to the warm-up. So what would you say are your go-to tips in the warm-up? And what would you really want to feel underneath you before you head out on course?
Well, you've missed one of my things here, Nicole, which is as I'm getting ready, or depending on, you know, if it's an international, then you've got all the days beforehand as well, haven't you? But I do like a bit of visualization. And and when I'm visualizing, I always start with the first thing that I think of as I'm visualizing myself, you know, going through the course and through these fences is what I'd like it to be like. And that's the way I start, and that's the way I finish when I'm visualizing these courses, on it really working out nicely. But then I also, and you can do this when you're walking the course and you're stood there at the fence, you look for, okay, well, what might go wrong here? And that can be quite a threatening thing to, you've got to be very careful doing this, because you don't want to get into a negative mindset where you're just thinking about things going wrong and just go, oh my God, I could fall, and leave it at that. Think about, okay, my horse could, maybe I've come in a little bit too fast. I didn't set up as well. He wasn't really listening to me. He's running a little bit deep. And then you need to think, you don't need to visualize yourself falling. You need to think, okay, at that point, I would really sit up, really soften, but I really work on my body, and I would try and get just everything in that good balance where I'm not going to go out the front door and I'm not going to load the front end of the horse. So I give the horse every chance to get his shoulders up and out of the way. So you're thinking about, here's a problem starting to unfold, and here's how I would solve that problem. So that it's not just an unfamiliar thing for you. And actually being aware that that could happen will make it for me, anyway, it means I stay on top of that, being like, oh no, if I feel myself daring, you know, maybe it's a tight time or something like that, and I'll go, oh no, with this fence, this is a place where I could really get drawn into the base, and it's quite a vertical face, and it's not a place to get in deep. So, you know, 10 strides out, I'm already starting to really get that upper body back and, you know, say whoa to the horse a little bit and just start to balance, because I know it's really important for that fence. Same with the turning fences and things like that. You go, oh, I could start to be sort of, you know, pulling on the right rein, so I've got to turn right, and I'm losing the left shoulder, and actually thinking, no, I've got to keep the outside rein. I've got to turn the horse's shoulder, not just turn the horse's head. And so again, that little bit of visualization going, this is how it might start feeling if it starts to go wrong. This is how I would counter that, you know, use my outside leg, use my outside rein a little bit more. So I think that helps. It gets you even more familiar with the course and even more familiar with all of the situations that might unfold. So again, back to that thing, it helps things to be a bit smoother and helps you to feel like you've got more time, because you're like, oh, I've nearly been here before already. You know, it feels like I'm riding this for the second time. For us who get to ride a couple of horses around a course, you know, there is no doubt about it. The second time does feel that little bit easier. So it is, you know, it is a little bit of an advantage. So if you really get good at visualization, you practice that, then it can nearly feel like it's your second time doing it.
But I guess when you're at home doing your exercises in the school, you can practice that. Like, there's nothing to stop you doing that. You know, it's part of your training, so that it becomes kind of second nature to kind of be thinking in that way. So it's not that you just get to an event and think, oh, I might visualize that now. You can practice that at home as well. Okay, so what about warming up and what to do when you get down to the collecting mode? Bearing in mind, let's say for argument's sake, it is a one-day event and you are doing your cross-country last. So you've done your dressage and your show jumping at this point.
Well, so warming up is a process, and it is, it's exactly what it is. If it is that, look, even if it was an international, we would have probably had the horses out just for whether maybe they had a lunge in the morning, but maybe you took them for a little bit of a hack and a canter in the morning anyway. So the body's done something, but the body is still fairly cold again, even if you show jumped, you know, an hour beforehand and you had, kind of, you know, an hour and 45 minutes of standing still again, you still got to sort of warm it up again. But it obviously, the horse you're going to warm up a lot quicker in that situation. But that is, you've got to consider what you're warming up for as well. So if it's a 10-minute course because you're doing a long 4-star, or if it's a 5-minute course because you're doing a 1-day event, you're basically just preparing your horse for the question that lies ahead. You know, you need to, one of the big things that I focus on is the stride length. So I want to feel that stride length starts off, you know, it doesn't even start off in a 4-yard canter, 12-foot canter, 4-yard canter. It can start off a lot smaller than that, but actually you want your horse to be able to have a 5-yard canter for cross country at times, to really be traveling easily across the ground. So, you know, that's what I'm doing in the canters. I'm slowly sort of asking the horse to open its stride length a little bit, then come back and collect, practicing my control and my gear changes, then open up a little bit more the next time I do it, a little bit more the next time. It's all progressive. It's all a process. And I think having that set routine, my warm-ups now, to be honest, if someone showed me a video of me in a warm-up, I'd probably be able to tell them exactly what point in my warm-up I'm at, you know, unless I'm walking, because I'll walk at the beginning and I'll put in a few walk breaks as well before I start. But generally the way I warm up now has become such a routine it really helps me to not get nervous. I think it helps the horse as well to just settle down and get familiar with things. There can be holdups and things like that. So you might have to adjust. I always like to do something about 4 to 5 minutes before I go out the start box, that I've just had that last little bit of a high intensity kind of burst. If you're going for a really long track, like that 10-minute track, it's important to basically empty the horse's spleen so that the horse has this huge reserve of red blood cells that it stores away in its spleen. And once they empty that, which they would do after, you know, they run from a tiger or whatever, but one kind of high intensity sprint, and they'll empty their spleen and they now have all that extra red blood cells kind of available to them. It's what people call the second wind. But you don't want to, there's no disadvantage to starting with that. You know, it's not like if you use that, you then lose it later on. You basically have loads of extra capacity available to you. Now, you might not need it for a short course, but for a long course, it's good. It's good to really have them properly warmed up. So you've got to do that as well.
Interesting. I guess the other thing on that is that if you aren't really sure what you can be doing or what you should be doing or what would suit you if you do get really nervous, is talk to your trainer at home. If you talk to your coach, and kind of put something together that you know you can learn, and so you give yourself some structure, like Sam's just said. Do you do that, Sam, a variation of with all of your horses, regardless of level? So all the way through to the youngsters at the lower levels?
It's a good point. Yeah, I'm always trying to achieve the same thing with them, that they, you know, I want to get that stride length warmed up. I want to get the heart and lungs and muscle. Well, the first thing, the muscles warmed up, then the heart and lungs, the stride length is sort of, the elasticity of that is coming as well. And then the controls. So being able to do those gear changes, that they're able to open up and then do a nice transition back for me as well, and sort of accept that downward transition, and make it nice and efficient, so it's not a long conversation when I need to slow down for a fence. It's an effective, quick, they're expecting it, they know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Same with the fence, same on the fences. So I'll be jumping fences a little bit on angles and things like that, so that my directional control is there. I've warmed up my turns, and I've warmed up being able to hold a line even when I'm on an angle. So those things, every horse really needs that. But some of the kind of more laid back horses, I might be adding in little tactics like landing after a fence and just a quick little double tap with my leg when I land, to just say, hey, come on, stay here. Don't land and sort of switch off your hind legs, land and almost think accelerate. And then with some of the quite, the hot horses who tend to get strong, be putting in a lot of transitions. I would be sort of the minute that they go to go, oh, I know what this is, it's cross country, I'm off. The minute that they try to take over control, it's like just a nice, polite, gentle reminder to say, no, I haven't asked for that. So there's a lot of those in the warm-up, because they know cross country is coming. They know they're in the cross country warm-up. The other horses are there. The microphones are going full blare. They know it's there. So they're starting to really anticipate and get quite, so they need quite a lot of reminders to just say that you've still got to listen to my instruction. And I think that's one that a lot of people can struggle with. And I would really encourage, you don't have to do this just when you're doing cross country training, to say, there will be a little bit of that practicing your warm up in a training session. But, I could do this on a Skype call with someone, in terms of describe what your horse does, describe the feelings that you get, and let's think about the tactics. Because it's not always just about, if we think of this like cooking, it's not always about having someone there saying, yeah, now put your flour in, now put it in the oven for this much. Oh, careful, that's getting a bit hot, take it off the heat now. Basically telling you what to do. No one's going to do that for you when you're on cross country. So you need to understand the whole dynamic, how it works, why your horse is getting strong, or why your horse is difficult to turn. And then that will help you to understand whether actually, maybe putting in a stronger bit might not help me. Maybe I actually need to have some little tactics in terms of those, whether it's transitions or in terms of jumping on a circle or doing something like that, to help me. So definitely talk it through with someone.
Okay. What about just before we leave the start box? So you're warming up and something's gone wrong. So you've had a couple of really uncomfortable jumps, or you've stopped, or God forbid you've fallen off, or something hasn't gone to plan. What do you need to do before you actually do get out of the start box? What can you do to kind of regroup and get yourself back on track?
Well, it's not always about what you need to do. It's like, if there's something that you can do, then that's great. So if you're having a few awkward jumps, or you've fallen off, and there's time to sort of just go back to basic, take a deep breath and just go back to the smallest jump in the warm-up and just jump that, confidently a couple of times. You again, just pretend it's a show jump or something like that, or, not panic too much. Like, it's just, I would straight away put myself in the mindset, go, oh, thank God that didn't happen on course. I have a chance to fix this. That one didn't count. I had a run out in the warm-up, or I stopped in the warm-up, or I fell off in the warm-up. Brilliant. That's not on my score sheet. Got that one out of the way. And let's see what I can do to address that. Maybe, someone says, all right, Sam, you've got 2 minutes. And you decide, oh, I'm just going to go and jump one more. And I fall off and it takes me a minute to get back on. I've probably got to get checked by a doctor who's hopefully just there. First thing I'm asking is, can I have more time? If I want more time, can I have more time? Avoid the word need here in your mind. Don't put yourself and go, I need more time. Because then if you don't have more time, you're going to think that I can't do this. And that's not the case. If I fall off and I can get back on and I can get cleared, and maybe even someone has said 3, 2, 1, go, and I'm still 10 seconds from the start box and I've already lost 10 seconds, it's the only option that I have available is I either start or I don't start. And I'm starting. I'm not throwing, you know, I've prepared for this event. It's 10 seconds. I might be able to get that 10 seconds back. I will think about what can I do? And I can go down to that first fence. I know it's not going to be the most difficult fence on course. And I can just take a deep breath and just say, it's just a fence. You know, how many fences have I jumped in my life? How many fences has this horse jumped in my life? This is just one more fence. And I'm going to jump that fence as well as I possibly can at this moment in time. Jump the fence. Now I've got another fence coming up. It's fence two. And I'm just going to do that again. And you always just come back to taking it one fence at a time. What's the plan here? What do I need? What's the ideal way to approach this fence? You know, the pace, the line, the balance. And just focus on that. You know, there's no set rules. It'll be a great story to tell, you know, the time that you fell off and then the starter said go and you had to get back through the start box. You know, you can have a little smile like that to yourself if you're literally about to just go out the start box and you're like, oh my God, this could not have gone any worse.
Yeah.
But I'm leaving the start box and now it's just deep, relax. I've left the start box. Now, what is it within my control? And actually, everything that you did on your course walk, all that preparation that you've done, it's all still there. You know your course inside out. You've trained for months and years to this point. No one can take any of that away from you. Always be aware that it could have helped, you know, that your horse could now be, you know, if they, you know, towed you into a fence, got in a little bit deep and ended up leaving a leg and you plopped off the side. Well, they might just pay a little bit more attention and they might be that little bit quicker with their legs now. You know, there could be a positive upside to what just happened. It could be a great preparation for you. You know, so just get on with doing what you can do. If you have time to reset and rebuild, take the time. If you don't, always just get back to that kind of instinctive. Always do, that's the nature of the event rider and the cross country rider. Do the best you can at that moment with whatever situation you're in and with whatever resources you have available to you. Just get it done.
Okay, that's good advice. All righty. So you're out on course. Anything that you can really do while you're out there, apart from what we hope, listeners, is that you will have a really, really good time and you'll come home, both you and your horse, with a very, very happy smile on your face.
Yeah, well, don't. So, with the kind of what you're thinking and things like that, I think when you're approaching the fence because of your, your preparation and your practice in terms of your course walk. And again, like that's why I like the visualization as well. As you're preparing a fence, you're usually always going to be focusing on what you need to do at that moment in time. I think it's okay. I think where a lot of people struggle is actually the time in between fences when maybe they're doubting themselves or they're thinking, oh God, I hope I don't have a run out, or God, I'm in the lead. You know, I've never done a 23 dressage and I've just done a 23 dressage. I mean, my PB was a 29 coming in here. I've just taken 6 marks off it and I never jumped clear and I've jumped clear and I'm in the lead. I hope I, da, 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 da. All those thoughts are fine. Okay. But if they're not useful and you know, they're not useful, because they're really not at that point in time, but if they enter your head, you say, that's all right. Because it's okay that you think of crazy things. I do. I've thoughts of all sorts of weird things. We could do a whole show on it, things that Sam has thought going cross country.
I'm not sure we want to know.
No, you wouldn't want to know a lot of it, but there we go. But you say, look, that's okay. Those thoughts enter your head. That's all right, but come back to the moment. Okay, come back to what's useful. And then that's why I love to ride my tight lines on a cross country course, because actually if I am hugging the string and putting string marks on my boots because I'm riding that close to it, or if I'm looking for the optimal ground, I remember the last ERM I was at Chatsworth, Nicole, it'd been quite soft ground and I was looking for the best ground, and that gives me something to focus on that is useful for that moment in time. Yeah. And then in thinking about sometimes as I'm going along, like I like to think of sort of training my horses as I'm doing it. So I'm always going, you know, is this the optimum balance? You know, this stride, am I happy with this stride? Am I happy with how he's using himself, that he's not using too much energy, you know, going, going too fast, tanking at the bit. You know, do I need to sort of play with the contacts a little bit here, soften, give them a little pat? You know, I'm thinking about those things that are important to that, you know, that are within my control and are useful. And that's really where you need to keep your thoughts. I think you're I think when you're really approaching that fence zone, you know, it's for me, it's right, prepare time, shoulders up, push down into my stirrups a little bit, get that heel down, get that lower leg in the right position, you know, sort out the horse's balance, get his eyes on the fence, get his shoulders on the line, keep the engine coming and make sure that that horse is going over the fence before I am. Don't go over the fence before him or her.
No, that wouldn't quite go to plan. I actually think that it's important to remember as well that all of your training that Sam's just kind of mentioned over the last 40-50 minutes, all of those things that you've done at home have been building to this moment, and actually you can still do those things even though you're on a course. Obviously you're a bit more limited with what you can and can't do, but there's no reason why you can't take a pull or give them a bit of a kick and a reminder if they've fallen behind the leg or anything like that. So Sam, it's fascinating.
Thank you, Nicole. Well, my last one is if you struggle with nerves, it's take it away from you. You know, this isn't necessary, because the nerves are usually all about, you know, can I do this? Can I do that? My kind of most useful mindset mind state, I suppose, that I use is, you know, I'm the horse's trainer and I do think about the horse a lot. And I think about, I'm also trying to learn as I go around the cross country as well. So I think I am thinking about, oh, you know, how does he feel to turn left? How does he feel to turn right? You know, and if you're thinking about the detail, if you're thinking about your horse, is he reading this? How's his footwork? How's his balance coming into the fence? How's his response to my control? If that's where your mind is at, you're going to be doing a really good job of doing all of those things. And ultimately it is about trying to get our horses to that fence to let them do their job, which is to jump the fence. And it's really that simple. So if you're thinking very much more about your horse rather than about yourself, for me personally, that's a much more useful place to be. And it actually takes an awful lot of the nerves out of it. Because I'm basically just out to train my horse for another day. So that one's quite useful. But that's it, Nicole. I have no other wisdom, I don't think. I don't even know if there is any wisdom in that.
I'm sure you do. I've certainly picked up loads of things. And listeners, I really, really hope you guys have as well. And that it will help set you up for cross-country success. Sam, big, big thank you. Thank you for coming back on the USCA official podcast.
Pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this. We hope you'll find ways of putting it into practice as well. Don't forget, if you do, then tag us at US Eventing. We would love to see how you're all getting on. That's it from us for now, but we'll be back very soon with another episode of the USCA official podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the USCA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.